Welcome back to another episode. This is episode number 259. Today we have David Pritchard again on the podcast. He is the country manager for thenile.com.au and he has been based here for 5 years in the Philippines, that is, managing a team, and I see him as an operations guru. We previously actually interviewed him in episode one, would you believe? He was the first guest we had on this show, and I really do consider him to be, you know, a master in terms of the operational insight for outsourcing. So I certainly learned a lot. This is episode 259. We did also speak to him previously in episode 253. If you want more of that backstory specific to his operation here. So lots to learn from David. I really enjoyed this conversation. And as always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/259. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers, across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer make outsourcing easy. Consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to payoneer.com/outsource. That's payoneer.com/outsource. Hi and welcome back, everybody. Today, again, we are joined by David Pritchard of thenile.com.au. And David now has the prestigious title of being the most frequent guest here. This is his fourth episode. Congratulations, David. And I sort of see David as an operational guru and just want to tap into his wealth of knowledge now of managing people and managing Filipino teams within an outsourcing context. So, sorry, I spoke over you before, David, but hi, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Derek. It's great to be here for my fourth episode. Don't regard myself as a guru at all, but it's very flattering for you to suggest that.
Absolutely, and I have to pinch myself to kind of thinking that it's the fourth episode, but so, David, what I want to start with, if people haven't heard prior episodes, if they can, if you can just maybe introduce yourself and a little bit about the team that you manage here and the functions that they do.
Certainly. So, as I've mentioned on previous episodes, the parent company is The Nile, which is a online retailer in Australia, specializing in books, toys, and baby accessories. And here in the Philippines, we operate most of our internal processes, which include customer support, back-end order management, our product catalog management, marketing, and also human resources and bookkeeping and accounts. So we cover all of those functions plus a few more with a team with a headcount of, it varies depending on the time of year, but a team between 30 and 50 employees. And my job as country manager is to oversee all of that and to ensure that we fulfill our deliverables for the offshore, for the onshore company.
Great. And so now we have spoken at length about your specific environment, your learnings over the last 5 years. And if you want to go back and listen to those episodes, please do. But the summary is that 5 years in, you're still evolving. 5 years in, we're still all learning how to perfect these things, but you've definitely made incredible strides with that. And certainly in the last 12 months. I'm going to start by asking a very broad question. In my formative years, when I was about 20, I believe I was lucky enough to read two really formative books. One of them was Maverick by Ricardo Semler, and the other one was E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Not sure if you've read both or either of those, but they are fundamentally pole opposites. Maverick being the management philosophy of letting people be adults, doing whatever they want and organizing themselves for the best outcome for the business, versus e-myth is very much writing everything down, being incredibly process oriented, and you know, writing almost like the McDonald's method, where everything is a protocol or a process and it's written down and there are to-do lists for everything. What are your thoughts on the sort of polar extremes of both of those cases, and where do you see the Philippines fitting in?
Well, it's really interesting because, first of all, I haven't read either book, but that sounds like I should. Maybe I should have read them when I was 20 as well, but they both sound really interesting. I see merits to both, and I don't necessarily see them, based on what you've explained to me, I don't necessarily see them as polar opposites. In the Philippines context, the first thing to point out is that it is a very, well, when things work well in the Philippines outsourcing context is when you have strong standard operating procedures and everything is documented and people have clear parameters and guidelines to work with. Just casually telling somebody, please go and do this for me, or please take care of this area of responsibility, generally doesn't work that well in my experience in an outsourcing operation. People need to have really clear guidelines to follow and metrics to adhere to. To give you, just to jump aside for a second, to give you a little anecdote, with our bookkeeping, our accounts payable team, we have several people that handle that across the whole business based in Manila. And our financial controller in Sydney often has new things that they need to do, or clarifications that he wants made, changes made to the processes they're following. And we were finding previously where he was just basically calling up our senior accountant and telling her to change something, or sending an email, or going through it. Often weeks later, he would come back and complain and say, wait a second, this isn't being followed, or obviously they didn't understand what I was saying, this isn't working. And I said, well, okay, we need to take a different approach here. We have an internal team here in Manila which is in charge of what we call process execution, and we have a process expert. And instead of talking directly to the senior accountant, you should talk to him and explain the process to him, give him your guidelines, and then his responsibility is to make sure that is cascaded adequately and thoroughly to the team. Now, cascading is a common word you hear in the Philippines, probably not so common in this context outside, but basically what it means is properly delivering a change. Don't just give basic instructions, make sure it's documented correctly, make sure there's been a proper session with all the involved employees where it's been delivered to them, all their questions have been addressed, and then when they're all happy, then get sign off from all of them that they understand it. And then you can finally close it off and say, right, we have implemented this change, however big or small it may be. And when we took that approach, which is a little bit more labor intensive, we started to find that these misunderstandings, these misalignments of expectations disappeared, and it was much more effective. And so that's an illustration of, I guess, the latter approach you mentioned, the strong process-oriented, detail-oriented approach. And so that does work more effectively in the Philippines. Getting back to the other side of it, the autonomy side, if I recall correctly, that's important too. And the major challenge that I have had over 5 years, and where we've started to make some big strides over the last year, is getting individual employees here in the Philippines, regardless of their level of seniority, whether they're at a manager level, a team lead level, or just at a level one rank and file agent level, is I want them to be the drivers of change and innovation and the drivers of productivity. I don't want them to be purely passive and only what I say, or only take any initiative if I'm the one that sets them off on that course. And that is a problem that I think is quite unique, not unique, but it is quite acute in the Philippines. There is a culture that, unfortunately, an organizational culture that does not generally, in my experience, encourage or reward people taking initiative. They generally wait for instructions and only do things when instructed to do so. Just an illustration in terms of mindset and how you can observe it, I used to find that I would call meetings at a certain time and I'd say, right, we're all going to meet to discuss something. There's several different people involved and we're all going to be sitting down at 10 a.m. And then I would be late for some reason. I'd be busy doing something. And then I'd find that And of course, I'm supposedly the big boss in the office. I'm the most, I don't think of myself that way, but they think of me as the most senior person there. I would find that maybe I'm busy, distracted with something, and then it's 5 or 10 past 10, and I'm sitting at my desk and I realize, oh, wait, I forgot about that meeting. And then I'd go and look and I'd see that everyone else was still sitting in their desk. No one had actually convened for that meeting because they were waiting for the boss to be the one that comes out and says, right, we're meeting now. Mm-hmm. And if I go and sit there, they assume, well, the meeting's not happening because he's the person that takes all the initiative. And I said, I want that to change, where I want you guys knocking on my door and saying, hey, what's going on? We have a 10 a.m. meeting and we should all be meeting here. Why aren't you here? That's the kind of approach I want. And if you took it into more of an operational context, you know, if a task or a process we've given somebody or a bit of work we've given them is not working, if they're struggling to meet their outcomes and they need our help, if they need us to come and say, wait a second, this needs to change, there are wrong expectations, we need to totally change our operating procedure, I want them to be the ones coming to me and saying, hey, David, this is what we need. I need you to drive this change with Sydney. I need your help on this. But I want it to come from them. And that has been something that's been quite a struggle to inculcate, and it does come down to a degree of autonomy, and it also comes down to finding the kind of people that are able to thrive with those expectations. And the success I've had is that some of the people that have been with us since the first year, and obviously they're very good employees because they've stuck with us this long, over the last year have really started to come into their own and started to become those drivers of change. And I think it's just been a matter of identifying that kernel in them, that they're that kind of personality, and encouraging it and making them realize that it's something that we value and reward, and setting their expectations, and of course also aligning their goals by setting the right KPIs. And I've started to build a team around me. You know, when they come and say that to me and I'm not the one who has to give them those instructions, that's a great success for me. So that's how I think I would marry those two different approaches.
Nice. And you mentioned earlier process execution, and everyone really starts, and you know the industry is really known for its process and the people being producers. Where do you see the value add, and is it a reality that people can move up the value chain? You know, and as I see it, people moving from being producers to management to strategy and then to leadership. Do you think that Western businesses can harness the resources in the Philippines, not just for the production stage, but right through the value chain of a business?
Yes. In short, I think absolutely. And I think it's about identifying that talent wherever it occurs. You know, it could be in somebody that has a very junior role, someone that is working in quite a siloed area where they don't necessarily get involved in other aspects of the business just purely because they've been told to operate a certain way. Over time, you can identify that in certain employees, and they can suddenly become extremely valuable to the organization. I have one employee that pops into my mind, a relatively shy guy, who's spoken English on first impressions was somewhat limited, but nonetheless, we suddenly noticed that this guy, whenever we gave this guy something that was a little bit different, he suddenly took initiative and thought about it beyond just the confines of the simple instructions, and he thought about the end goal and how we could do this better and how it fit in with other aspects of the business. And we saw those little clues early on, and then we just started saying, hey, this is somebody that's got potential, and we started building him up, giving him more responsibility. And every step that we have set for him, he's assumed that step and really flourished in it. And so there is great talent out there. You just need to identify it.
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
In my expectation, there is really no correlation between, and I'm talking about titles and other companies, there's no correlation between salary expectation, job title, and actual ability. So part of our challenge was how we're going to fulfill roles that require more responsibility. And we hired, you know, we've had some successes and some failures. Hired a lot of people into management roles, and overall, in general, we haven't always had the success we've wanted. Not necessarily because those managers weren't capable and talented people, but they didn't necessarily have the right skill set that fit our organization. And we've had far much more success in identifying those people within our organization that usually have entered at a relatively junior level, and seeing that they have the right mindset, and then helping them however we can, allowing them to expand, letting them realize that they're in an environment where they can have trust that we're going to support them, and that, you know, they're free and in fact encouraged to speak their mind and to offer suggestions and to try and innovate. And building those people up, you suddenly find people that are of extraordinary value.
Yeah, because it's a different culture in the Philippines, isn't it? In that people are taught really to do and not ask so many questions, whereas I think in the West, you know, the kids are encouraged to ask and inquire, and maybe as people move up through management and leadership, then they are really magnifying those traits. Whereas if you take people from when they are junior and they're young and impressionable and excitable, and you can get them thinking strategically and leading and, you know, being bold in terms of their decisions and movements, then you can really, propagate some fantastic senior level skill there.
Absolutely. It's in some ways, the earlier you get somebody, the better, because there can be a lot of habits or mindset tendencies that a person can develop, which aren't necessarily bad in general. They may work really well in other companies, but they're not necessarily suitable for your organization. And then when you bring somebody in externally, you'll find that it just doesn't seem to fit, and those habits and traits are very difficult to change. You know, a typical manager you hire is going to, or in any kind of senior leadership position, is going to have a box of tricks that have worked for them in previous companies, approaches, and just ways of doing things. And it is always going to be a challenge taking somebody who's developed in another environment and trying to get them to work with your environment, which is obviously unique to your own business. And that's certainly been our experience. Very recently, we've even decided that we're going to eliminate the requirement for a university or college degree with our new hires. Previously, we had that requirement and we hired some really good people, but we've also experimented with hiring people that have come straight out of high school, or maybe have come out of high school and had some experience working in, maybe a few years experience working in a different company. And we don't see any correlation where the university degree suddenly gives them a major edge in terms of their ability and productive capacity. So I think that's really important. And to your point, I think it's 100% right. I get a few different answers from different Filipinos I talk to, but it does definitely seem that being inquisitive and asking questions is generally frowned upon in the educational context that people have when they're at school. And it also, I think, translates. You see that a lot even in local corporate structures here. It's very hierarchical, and your job is to do what you're told to do, and you know it's not your place to suddenly question things or to make suggestions about how things could work better at an organizational level. You know, it could be a major oversimplification. I don't mean this as a major criticism of Filipino culture, but it's certainly in my own context something I've encountered, and it's an attitude that when you find it very entrenched in certain employees, it's very hard to change. And so it is much easier if you can get somebody who hasn't got years and years of these habits entrenched, and then you can sort of set expectations. And like I said, in our case, it has taken a few years with some employees. Employees that obviously had something there, they had a kernel of that ability to be the driver driver of change and innovation, the natural inquisitiveness. But it has taken a while to work on them and get them to a point where they realize they can flourish with that approach.
Yeah, again, I think, you know, these are all just fundamental management or business philosophies, aren't they? Some business owners I know, they say, you know, we're not a university. We don't want to train people. We just want people to lead our company to the next stage that we need. Versus, you know, there's also a lot of companies like yourself saying we can get the best out of people if we get them when they're young and not yet stuck in their ruts, and then, you know, spend a few years really building them up to be really super strong leaders in their roles. So it is interesting, isn't it? And, you know, certainly it's fascinating to see the real life examples of these things. I want to dive in to some future trends soon with you, David. Just a little bit of warning there, but, you know, if you were to start again, whether it be the Nile or whether you were starting a business from overseas, could you see yourself, you know, literally building the entire team in the Philippines and obviously using that cost arbitrage as one of the significant competitive advantages? Do you see any reason now why you would necessarily have any staffing based in a whatever, a hometown or home country?
I think the answer is that we would do as much as we possibly could, or I would do as much as I possibly could in the Philippines. Probably in my own personal case, because I now am far more of an expert in managing and dealing with people in this environment than I ever was in Australia. But also, you have the cost advantage, and you do have certain skill sets that are really strong here, perhaps stronger than in most onshore markets like Australia or the US. A lot is said, for example, about the in a customer support context as one function. I think it's a bit of a cliche in certain respects, and I could critique it a lot, but there is something to be said in the fact that Filipinos are quite passionate about customer support, and they go to it with a greater degree of sincerity and passion than the typical customer support people you generally find in Australia. Now, again, not a criticism of everyone who works in customer service in Australia, and it's also just one example, but you could sort of point to things in different areas as well. So there are definite benefits to doing in the Philippines beyond just cost. Certain functions, I have to be honest, in our context, we probably wouldn't think of doing in the Philippines on day one. Obviously, you've got things that require a physical presence. So in the case of our business, you've got our fulfillment centers, you know, where we have to ship things to customers and store stock. Well, that makes sense due to geographical issues. But there are also things that, in principle, could be done in the Philippines. But to be honest, we would probably still do in Australia, at least on day one. For example, we have managers in Sydney, account managers who deal with our vendors, right? So vendor relationship managers. And there's a lot of cultural context there, just sort of understanding the way that Australians communicate, understanding the way the different retail industries operate over, where we've just found that most Filipinos would struggle to understand all the jargon and just to sort of understand those subtleties of communication. And so those roles still do in Australia, and certain sort of high-end customer service roles where you want a really strong cultural affinity, like certain specialized roles with customer support for our baby accessories, where you really need to understand the context of Australian parents and what they're looking for. We have chosen, despite the higher cost, to do those in Australia. So there are still certain roles where I think the cultural barrier and challenges of doing it here, we would still lean towards doing it in Australia. But other than that, if it's something that I think can be done effectively here, our first preference would always be to do it in the Philippines.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? That cultural alignment and affinity is huge, really, isn't it? And, you know, I think friction, if there's friction of doing business or interactions, then it's most obvious there. Just in general interactions and the nuances of cultural alignment, and that can sometimes be very costly in terms of a business interaction. Now, let's go into the future, David. And I know that you're very abreast of your current affairs and politically aware and global trends. Where do you see outsourcing going, what's going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years. You know, recently it's been drudged up again that Donald Trump is threatening, you know, banning outsourcing. No doubt that's because he sees a weakness in that part of the economy for the US and maybe the first world. Where do you see the global trends of employment going with outsourcing being a part of that? Is all of this going to come to the Philippines? Are there going to be job losses in the West? Is it a good outcome or a bad outcome?
I'm certainly not an expert in any of this stuff. It's all just speculation. But the two major threats that people talk about to outsourcing in the Philippines, one is the one that you mentioned, which is, I guess, a kind of a resistance in those onshore countries. People want to keep jobs in the U.S., for example, and so that's a certain constituency that Donald Trump, for example, appeals to, saying, no, we want to keep jobs onshore, so we want to penalize companies that are doing outsourcing and apply various carrots and sticks to keep these jobs onshore. Right, so that's, on the face of it, you'd imagine that's a threat to the burgeoning outsourcing industries in countries like the Philippines. And then the other one, of course, is the great threat of automation that everyone talks about. You know, you're building all these jobs, and the Philippines' major advantage is the fact that it's an English-speaking country. And so you've got all this voice capacity, which few other low-wage cost countries do. But all of a sudden, automation could just sweep the carpet from underneath that, because you won't need humans with voice capability for the basic stuff. So those are the two kind of challenges that you usually hear bandied about. I'm sure there are more, but those are the two that pop into my head. With regard to the political aspect, I think you can't really, as much as you can jig things around and apply incentives and penalties, I don't think you can really change the fundamentals. You know, I mean, people will just find other ways to achieve an outsourced outcome. I mean, if wages are going to remain as high as they are in countries like the US, it's going to be incredibly expensive. And the natural advantage that low-wage countries have is still going to be there. So there will just have to be realignments, and people will have to find ways around it. But companies are still going to be looking for ways to do things offshore because it's more effective. So I think really those kind of political movements are probably going to backfire for the US, because it'll make everything more expensive. And when things are more expensive, the quality and the business itself suffers.
Mm.
So I think in the case of the US resistance to outsourcing, it'll be a distortion, but ultimately that'll lead to pressure for outsourcing to become possible through some other means. With regard to automation, I think that is ultimately a natural challenge for the outsourcing industry, but I think we're still a long way off. I think we still face challenges, cultural challenges. You mentioned nuance earlier, at least when you're talking about customer support or any kind of voice function. You know, in Filipino employees, we train them up and they get very skilled at delivering customer support, and they understand, they speak good English, so they understand the questions customers are asking them, and they understand how to give the best answers they possibly can. But the reality is, language is an incredibly complex thing, and, you know, there can be, if you're speaking Australian English, for example, there can be five or six different ways of saying the same thing or asking the same question. And the slightly different word you use, even though on the surface it's just a synonym, can have a huge amount of meaning. And there's a lot of subtext in the way somebody's asking a question, which tells the listener what they're really looking for, the outcome they want. And we naturally understand that if we're from the same country or the same environment. But we face that challenge with Filipinos who come from a very different environment. Even though they speak English differently. They use terminology differently. So you have that challenge between having somebody that's onshore doing customer support and someone in the Philippines. Well, imagine how much harder that's going to be if you're talking about a robot and trying to train a robot to understand all the niceties and subtleties of the way people communicate. And basically, you don't hear very often people saying how great artificial intelligence is now. You hear people sort of saying, oh, it's going to be the future, it's going to get better. But my own experience, anyone that's ever really tried to use Siri properly or any of these ones, or has spoken to, you know, has called up a support hotline and spoken to a robot, generally they get very frustrated and the robots can't understand what they're asking unless it's a very simple query. So I think there's a heck of a lot of work for artificial intelligence before it gets to that point where it can really replace humans, which buys the Philippines a little bit more time. But they're still going to have to, in this country, we're still going to have to get smarter. We're going to have to train up workers, like I said, to be those drivers of change, to be the guys that, and maybe it was my previous interview, I'm not sure, but to be the guys that drive innovation and actually deliver by helping you improve your business, not just fulfilling a specific task you ask them to do. So there needs to be a lot of investment in building up the workforce to have greater capability and to be able to deliver more value.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, on the point in terms of labor migration and Trump and things like that, I just find it an incredible concept that previously labor, you know, which was the currency of work, and the labor force, the workforce, were actually geographically contained and people could be stopped at borders. And that was a country's way of metering and monitoring the amount of labor supply. Whereas now everything is online and the majority of productivity in a country is done online from behind a screen and keyboard. And it just cannot be policed anymore, can it? You know, the lever that countries had, which was stopping people at borders or issuing a number of visas, is no longer applicable anymore. And you know, you could literally have, you know, the vast majority of the productivity of an entire country done remotely. And I think it's something that the country heads are still grappling with in some sense. And you know, because of that, I just don't think that it's in any way enforceable, policeable, or even, you know, people can't really monitor this anymore. So it's going to be fascinating to watch it play out. Yeah,
I agree completely. I just don't think with political tinkering you can change those fundamentals. At best, you can achieve kind of distortions, and you can sort of try and realign incentives. But ultimately, nothing that that a government can do can change the fundamental fact that most work can be done remotely now. And that is not constrained by physical borders. So a country or a government that tries to prevent its own companies from outsourcing is simply going to put those companies at a disadvantage. Somebody else, another company, maybe in another country that is in the same industry, will be able to do it, and they'll have a major competitive advantage because their costs are lower.
Yeah, absolutely. But sensibility has never really stopped politicians tinkering previously, has it? So it'll be interesting to watch it play out. So thank you so much, David. And again, it's just been incredible insight, and I always learn so much talking to you. So thank you for your time. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, of course, or learn more about the Nile, how can they do that?
Check out our retail website, which is The Nile, which is like the Nile as in the river of Egypt, river in Egypt, thenile.com.au. And I'm always happy to be contacted by anyone. So you can just look me up on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only David Pritchard in the Philippines.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks very much, Derek.
That was David Pritchard of thenile.com.au. If you want to get in touch with David or know any more about this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/259. And as always, if you want to get in touch with us, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.